It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
People can start finally crawl out from under that mountain of debt.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us. I'm Mark Webster. Well, no shortage of strong feelings on the $300 billion student loan forgiveness plan unleashed by President Biden yesterday.
The federal government will forgive up to $10,000 for people making less than $125,000 a year. Pell Grant recipients can receive $20,000 in loan forgiveness.
NBC's Bree Jackson. President Biden says it's going to give a lot of young people a badly needed fresh start.
Provide more breathing room for people so they have less burdened by student debt.
Count Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren is a fan.
This is about helping America's working class, America's middle class, and really targeting that relief, most relief, to those who need it most.
But folks on the other side of the aisle call this loan forgiveness plan an unfair burden on taxpayers, especially those who did the work to pay off their loans. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
I'm sure the people who will benefit from it will love it. The question is it fair to everyone else?
Ohio State student Shruti Shachish is among those who aren't overly impressed.
A lot of students also don't take federal loans. They take like privatized loans as well. So it's a good balance for now, but I do hope for more in the future.
The White House appeared to dodge direct questions on how the loan forgiveness program will be paid for, but financial analyst Dan Geltrude tells Fox News the answer is all too predictable.
It always comes down to the same group, the American taxpayers. So even if you say, well, we're going to borrow it, who pays? If you're going to print money, who pays? That's why we have inflation. Everybody is paying that price.
McConnell labels the program student loan socialism. The winds of change beginning to sweep through Uvalde, Texas.
I move that good cause exists to terminate the non-certified contract of Pete Arredondo effective immediately.
After intense public pressure, the Uvalde School Board met last night and fired Police Chief Pete Arredondo as a result of his response to the deadly Robb Elementary School shooting back in May. The board deliberated before unanimously voting to fire him. This parent says that firing was long overdue.
He should be fired automatic, no matter what. No pay, no new jobs, no nothing.
Robb Elementary School student Caitlin Gonzalez was at the meeting. She spoke out ahead of the announcement.
I have messages for Pete Arredondo and all the law enforcement that were there that day. Turn in your badge and step down. You don't deserve to wear one.
Many in the district are calling for further firings of police involved in the delayed response to the elementary school shooter who claimed 21 lives during that mass shooting. First Lady Jill Biden remains in isolation in Delaware today after testing positive for COVID again. A statement from her communications director calls it a rebound case and notes she has experienced no reemergence of symptoms. The Biden's COVID cases have focused the spotlight on treatment with Paxlovid, but a new study finds it won't help younger patients.
An Israeli study has found its effectiveness seems to be limited to older adults. Researchers looked at 190,000 COVID patients, 65 and older, and found Paxlovid reduced hospitalizations among that population by 75% when given shortly after infection. Those between the ages of 40 and 65 saw no measurable benefit.
CBS's Linda Kenyon. Florida Republican Governor Ron DeSantis had no kind words for COVID pandemic point man Dr. Anthony Fauci during a fundraiser in Florida yesterday.
And I'm just sick of seeing him. I know he says he's going to retire. Someone needs to grab that little elf and chuck him across the Potomac.
Dr. Fauci announced Monday he's leaving his current positions in December to pursue new ventures. The 81-year-old White House chief medical advisor has drawn the ire of conservatives throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. Texas is sending asylum seekers to New York City on buses wearing bracelets with barcodes.
City officials say they've known about the bracelets, but migrants didn't start arriving with them until this week. They were cut off as soon as migrants arrived to Port Authority because officials worry the barcodes are being used as tracking devices to ensure migrants weren't getting off the bus until it reached New York or Washington, D.C. The Texas governor says the bracelets are part of processing protocol. However, the city's Immigrant Affairs Commissioner Manuel Castro called it a way to intimidate people. I'm Natalie Migliori.
Today's the day the FBI is supposed to deliver a redacted version of the Mar-a-Lago affidavit to the Florida judge who okayed the raid.
No telling when Magistrate Judge Bruce Reinhart will make the redacted version of the affidavit public, but today is the deadline he set for prosecutors to suggest what should be blacked out. Reinhart has seen the full version, of course. He used it to authorize the search warrant. He signaled in an order earlier this week that he sympathizes with the prosecutor's argument that harm could be done to the investigation and potentially to witnesses if too much is released.
CBS's Stephen Portnoy. At least 22 people dead after Russian rocket strikes at a train station in Ukraine. This according to the country's president. Volodymyr Zelensky said the attack wounded 50 more. Three U.S. service members have been wounded in two rocket attacks in northeast Syria.
U.S. Central Command says U.S. bases in the region began taking rocket fire Wednesday afternoon. One service member was treated for a minor injury and returned back to duty. Two others are under evaluation for minor injuries. U.S. Apache helicopters responded by destroying three vehicles and rocket launching equipment and killing up to three militants who were suspected of firing the rockets. Earlier Wednesday, the U.S. launched airstrikes in Syria, carried out at the direction of President Biden. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Still to come on the Noon Report, Paladino moving on. Buffalo teachers rally for a new contract and a bittersweet ending for Hollidaysburg at the Little League World Series.
Well, good afternoon to all. We're keeping an eye on a cold front that will close the work week with some showers and storms. I'll be back with forecast details coming up in 10.
All right. Thank you, Kevin Williams. Now checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Businessman Carl Paladino has given up his bid to represent the brand new 23rd Congressional District. Paladino releasing a statement yesterday saying it's time for him to move on to the next chapter of his life and that he's thankful for everyone who supported him. Paladino was beaten by New York State Republican Committee Chairman Nick Langworthy on Tuesday. Langworthy now goes head to head with Democrat Max Della Pia on Election Day.
If you love our students,
pay our teachers.
If you love our students,
pay our teachers.
Buffalo teachers rallying outside of City Hall Wednesday to call on the city to step up efforts to negotiate a new contract. The gathering caught the ear of Superintendent Tanya Brown, who heard the vocal protest from her seventh floor City Hall office. She tells WIVB,
our teachers work hard, you know, and we appreciate that and we see that, which is why I wanted to come out of my office and come down and let them know that we do support them.
Buffalo Teachers Federation President Phil Remore.
We're hopeful that there, now there's a new superintendent, that when we return to negotiations with the fact finder, that there'll be a change in attitude.
The BTF says city teachers make less than their suburban counterparts, some of whom joined them on the picket line. Buffalo teachers haven't successfully negotiated a new pact with the city since 2019. The superintendent of the Utica City School District says students will notice increased security when they return to school next month. Bruce Karam says a weapons detection system has been installed at the entrance of all of the district schools. The Erie County Clerk's Outreach Center hours for pistol permits have been extended. We get the story from Family Life's Dee Haley.
Erie County Clerk Mickey Kearns has announced an extension of hours at the Clerk's Outreach Center for Erie County residents to submit pistol permit applications before changes to the New York Safe Act go into effect on September 1st. Once reforms do go into effect, there will be added requirements for approving permits, including additional paperwork, yearly training, and a personal meeting with a county licensing officer. This week, the Clerk's Outreach Center, located in West Seneca's Southgate Plaza, will be open regular hours from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. On Monday and Tuesday next week, the center will remain open until 7 p.m. and until midnight on Wednesday, August 31st. Dee Haley, Family Life News.
Thanks, Dee. A new poll from Siena College shows there are a lot of New Yorkers who aren't happy with the way their lives are going. Just 27% of people said they were more satisfied with their life than they were a year ago. 33% are less satisfied. However, many folks say they are satisfied with things like their family and friends, spiritual life, health, and even where they live. But 75% of those surveyed are either not very or not at all satisfied with the world as a whole. Now to Pennsylvania. The Senate race between Dr. Mehmet Oz and current Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman continues to heat up.
The two camps roasting each other over produce. Tuesday, an Oz campaign spokeswoman mocked Fetterman's stroke back in May by saying, quote, if he had ever eaten a vegetable in his life, he wouldn't have had a stroke. Fetterman responding in a tweet, I know politics can be nasty, but even then, I could never imagine ridiculing ridiculing someone for their health challenges. The veggie theme, a continuation of a previous spat between the two candidates vying for the seat in Pennsylvania, which could become a pickup for Democrats and help decide control of the Senate.
That's News Nation's Evan Lambert. Legislation is being introduced to establish an electronics recycling program for Pennsylvania. With the production of new electronics, many devices such as cell phones and laptops essentially become obsolete almost overnight. Disposing of those devices can be expensive for consumers. Senate Bill 1310 would amend the Covered Device Recycling Act to enhance and restructure the state's electronic recycling waste system. In doing so, Pennsylvanians will be able to safely dispose of their old electronic devices. The bill is now before the state Senate Environmental Resources and Energy Committee. Two prominent Pennsylvania politicians weighing in on President Biden's plan to cancel student debt. We get that story from Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
Yeah, Mark, Democratic U.S. Senator Bob Casey says the $300 billion move will, quote, give people the freedom to invest in their future, buy a home, or take a risk and start a business. While GOP U.S. Senator Pat Toomey, like many other Republicans, is not a fan of the plan. Toomey says, quote, taxpayers will foot the bill for this massive expenditure, including the vast majority of Americans who already paid off their loans, paid for tuition out of pocket, or do not even have post-secondary education, nor enjoy the higher lifetime earnings associated with it. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thanks, Brandon. A woman claiming that her injury vehicle accident was caused in part by the Youngstown Borough Trump House has had her appeal rejected. The Pennsylvania Superior Court this week upheld a lower court's determination that the Route 982 home owned by State Rep. Leslie Rossi could not be proven to have played a role in an October 2016 accident. The red, white, and blue home featuring a 14-foot cutout of former President Trump drew thousands of visitors in the lead up to the 2016 election. Kelly Rodman had claimed its appearance was a distraction to motorists in the area. The holiday has finally come to an end for Hollidaysburg at the Little League World Series in Williamsport.
May Castillo, a two-run shot. Texas with a win over Pennsylvania. They play again tomorrow, and they end the great season for Hollidaysburg.
ESPN with the call last night as Texas proved to be too much for the Tigers of Hollidaysburg, PA, beating them for the second time to eliminate the Keystone State's favorite team after a great run in Williamsport. The Tigers fell just a game short of a chance to play for the United States Championship. Hollidaysburg's manager, Jim McGuff, says his team had an amazing journey and that he couldn't be prouder of them. And that, appropriately, brings us to a check of sports.
Good afternoon, I'm Randy Snedley. Mark JT Realmuto did some yard work in Philly last night to help Philadelphia outlast Cincinnati 7-5. The win keeps the Phillies in the second wild card spot in the National League. The team holding down the first wild card spot, the Atlanta Braves, are also now just a game and a half behind the Mets in the East. The Braves crushed the Pirates last night 14-2. Matt Olson hit a granny in the win. Elsewhere in the National League, the Cubs beat the Cardinals 7-1 and the Dodgers down the Brewers 12-6. In the American League, the Orioles could not gain any ground on Seattle for that final wildcard spot. Baltimore fell to the White Sox 5-3. They remain 2.5 games out of a playoff position. Tampa Bay beat the Angels in 11, 4-3. Toronto 1-10, 3-2 over Boston. And the Astros were 5-3 winners against Minnesota. The Seattle Mariners lost their game to Washington after the Nats pushed across two runs in the top of the ninth. 3-1 your final. But Seattle rookie George Kirby became the first pitcher since 1988 to begin a game with 24 consecutive strikes. He ended up striking out 9 in 7 innings in a no decision. Not to be outdone, fellow Mariner rookie Julio Rodriguez became the first Seattle rookie to hit at least 20 home runs and steal at least 20 bases in a season. In other interleague action, winners Detroit 6-1 over the Giants, Texas 16-4 over Colorado, Oakland edged Miami 3-2, Cleveland shut out San Diego 7-0, and Kansas City downed the D-backs 5-3. That is a look at sports.
All right, thank you very much, Randy. Still to come on the Noon Report, reaction for and against the Biden student loan forgiveness plan, emotions still running high in Uvalde, and he had what in his pants?
Between now and September the 12th, you have a window of time to help protect children. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Earlier this summer, the U.S. Department of Education announced new regulations regarding Title IX, which is designed to ensure and protect access for women and girls in education. These new rules are 700 pages long and are being trumpeted by organizations like the National Education Association as a victory for victims of sexual harassment and clarification of discrimination based on sex. However, what is meant by sex in these new regulations will be a disaster for women and for children and for parents. The massive document is infected with the presumptions of transgender ideology, specifically that sex includes gender identity, and it ignores the biological realities of sex. Not only will these rules limit our daughters' opportunities to participate in sports and lead to dangerous violations of their privacy, but they will erase parental rights and free speech in favor of state-centered authority. There's a limited time now to speak into these regulations before they're instituted. In 1972, Title IX was enacted to provide equal access to education and athletics for girls and women. Recent reinterpretations of sex threaten the good goals of Title IX by turning reality on its head. In a recent meeting I attended, Bernadette Broyles, general counsel and president of the nonprofit law firm Children and Parental Rights Campaign, explained three major implications of this regulation. The first concern has to do with the removal of parental rights. Minors who decide to transition at school will be supported by the schools and led into the process of social transition, including using preferred pronouns, without requiring the consent of parents. It's Broyles' belief that this will weaponize government agencies like Child Protective Services and channel these children to so-called gender-affirming, which actually means the exact opposite, counselors and clinics. A second and primary concern is the remarkable damage that will be done to children, to their bodies and their emotions by encouraging and furthering social experimentation. For example, back in July, the FDA announced that puberty blockers, which activists claim are harmless, can actually cause brain swelling and vision loss. Their long-term cognitive effects are still being studied. Finally, Broyles spoke of the scandal intrinsic to girls having no private spaces and locker rooms or school trips, and the heartbreaking irony of women and girls losing place to male athletes all under the banner of Title IX. Even if your state has already acted in some ways, as some have, to protect parental rights and girls' opportunities in sports, these rules would challenge state legislation at the federal level. So what can we do? Every American has the opportunity right now to submit comments on these new regulations before September the 12th. Comments have to be submitted through the Federal Register. It's an online journal that publishes the federal government's rules and regulations. Rather than a Senate staffer tallying positions for or against a bill, staffers associated with the Federal Register look for unique comments. So if thousands of people flood the register with the very same script, well, that repeated comment would be counted as only one. So, please comment in your own voice, laying out your specific concerns with these regulations. The Child and Parental Rights Campaign has provided multiple prompts, not scripts, to assist you in registering a comment. These are comment starter letters for parents, for educators, for community religious leaders. In your comment, tell a unique story. Specify your concerns for your daughter, your son, your grandchild, your school. Please flood the Federal Register with unique comments about these regulations before September the 12th. Visit the Child and Parental Rights Campaign website for resources, links, and prompts. That's the Child and Parental Rights Campaign. The future of our children may very well depend on it. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Now let's check in with Kevin Williams.
Should be a pretty good weekend. For this afternoon, we'll have partly to mostly sunny skies, but with a stray thunderstorm in parts of western and central New York, the high temperature into the 80s. It'll be variably cloudy and humid tonight and tomorrow, with showers, a couple thunderstorms in the mix as well. Low tonight, 60s, the high tomorrow, mid-70s to the middle 80s. And on Saturday, it'll be a partly to mostly sunny day with a slight chance of a shower, especially from the Twin Tiers south. High temperature Saturday in the 70s.
All right, thank you very much, Kevin. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm Mark Webster. Thank you again for joining us. Economists among those weighing in on the impact of the presidential plan to slash student loan debt.
It will put a little more liquidity in the economy over time, and that will have some impacts, but it's not going to be some kind of massive infusion of spending.
Economist Ray Perryman says without a student loan bill, some people will go shopping. However, Texas State University finance professor William Chittenden says Biden's plan will only help a small fraction of Americans. Americans.
It's going to be about a third of all borrowers that will have their debt completely wiped out because they owe less than $10,000.
Chittenden says the president's loan forgiveness ignores the rising cost of higher education and the high loan rates. Without changes to that, he says, future presidents will be faced with the same issue for years to come. As for student borrowers, though, they are predictably pretty happy.
I've racked up a lot of debt, and it would be a huge financial blessing to get rid of at least even a little bit of that.
Some conservative critics say the forgiveness program amounts to a ploy to bribe young voters ahead of the midterm elections. The Uvalde School Board voted unanimously last night to fire embattled police chief Pete Arredondo as a result of his response to the deadly Robb Elementary School shooting back in May. Arredondo did not attend the meeting, but instead requested through his attorneys to be reinstated. Brett Cross lost his 10-year-old son at Robb Elementary. He took issue with the school board deciding to retreat to a closed session to deliberate.
Our babies are dead. Our teachers are dead. Our parents are dead. The least y'all can do is show us the respect to do this in the public.
This parent says they just want justice.
We just want to fight for our children, and we want them to be remembered. We just want to stop being disappointed.
Also in Uvalde, word that funeral homes there refused to handle the body of the Robb Elementary School shooter. Reports say his body sat in a morgue for close to a month while the town's two funeral homes refused to perform any services for him or his family. Eventually, a company over 40 miles away agreed to handle those funeral arrangements. Pfizer's COVID-19 antiviral Paxlovid has little benefit to younger people while still reducing the risk of hospitalization or death in seniors.
A new study from the New England Journal of Medicine showed that people between the ages of 40 and 64 who took Paxlovid had no significant drop in their risk of hospitalization or death. However, when people over the age of 65 took the antiviral, their risk of being hospitalized dropped 73%, and their risk of dying from the disease dropped 79%. I'm Trey Thomas.
Pro-life groups in Texas cheering the state's trigger law, which goes into effect today and bans abortions. Joe Poyman with the Texas Alliance for Life says it puts the Lone Star State in the lead when it comes to defending unborn babies.
Texas provides the most protection of any state and provides the most penalties for doctors who perform illegal abortions.
All 23 abortion clinics in Texas have now stopped performing the procedure, leaving pro-choice groups furious. Los Angeles County being ordered to pay Kobe Bryant's widow $16 million over photos of the 2020 helicopter crash that killed the NBA star and seven others. Bryant didn't speak to reporters after Wednesday's verdict, but she did hear from supporters gathered outside the courthouse.
We love you, Vanessa. Justice for Kobe and your baby.
CBS's Carter Evans says questions remain about those photos.
All of those photos haven't been accounted for. They were allegedly deleted during the investigation, but that has been unable to have been completely confirmed.
A co-plaintiff who also lost a spouse and a child in that chopper crash received $15 million. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle are adopting a beagle rescued from a dangerous breeding facility in Virginia. The royal couple adopted a seven-year-old beagle named Mamma Mia, who had been used for breeding her entire life at the Envigo facility. About 3,000 of those Envigo beagles have been removed from the property as of this week. Well, there's ants in your pants, and then there's the California man who was caught at the southern border with dozens of reptiles tucked in his trousers.
Shake your pants! Shake your pants!
Federal prosecutors in Los Angeles announced Wednesday that 30-year-old Jose Manuel Perez pleaded guilty to importing wild animals into the country. Perez is accused of smuggling over 1,700 wild animals worth over $700,000 into the U.S. Not all of those were in his pants, however. He was arrested in February at the San Diego border crossing with about 60 snakes and lizards concealed in his clothes. He faces over 20 years in federal prison if convicted. I'm Michael Kastner.
All right, you're listening to the Noon Report on Family Life. Up next, businessman and author Bob Hassan addresses the topic of work and the big question, why don't people want to work anymore?
My name is Bob Hassan. I am a businessman. I'm an author. I just wrote a book called Shortcuts.
Bob, why don't people want to work these days?
Tracy, that's an interesting question. We know that after the pandemic, we experienced something called the Great Resignation, where between, depending on what news agencies you're listening to, 4.5 to 11 million people left the workforce and didn't come back. In May, the Wall Street Journal featured an article about a new phenomenon in the workforce that we haven't seen before, that employees are ghosting employers. And what the article said was numerous people cross sectors, cross industry, all across the country were interviewing for jobs, getting accepted, accepting jobs, and then not showing up on the first day of work. We're having these interesting things out in the workforce where right now employers are having a hard time finding workers, and workers are making decisions whether to come to work or not. And I don't think we've ever seen that in the workforce before.
Yeah. What do you think is at the root of it all?
I'm not sure if it's after the pandemic, people have decided that possibly they have other things that they want to do, or if they feel like they have more options because it is an employee environment right now where employers are looking for employees. But at the end of the day, I think our yes has to be yes, our no has to be no. And there's a common courtesy with people that if you're going to accept a position, then accept it and show up, or at least call and tell the employer that that's not happening.
Sure. Otherwise, you're really just wasting other people's time.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bob, are we supposed to feel passionate about our work each day, those of us that are on the job?
Tracy, in my new book, Shortcuts, Chapter 5, is titled, Do We Deserve Passion? And I'm going to go to the etymology of the word passion. It goes all the way back to the passion of the Christ, the work that Christ did on the cross. And that passion is rooted in suffering. So I think in today's culture, when people talk about passion, they're talking about the fact that they want to feel good in everything that they do. My particular viewpoint is that passion is built by relationships. For example, if you are an extrovert and you are in a job in a cubicle working on spreadsheets, you're probably not going to be passionate about that job. Or conversely, if you're an introvert and you have a job in a call center cold calling people to try to sell things, you're not going to be probably successful. So part of being passionate about it is being placed in the right job based on if you went to college, your major, or if you take personality tests or aptitude tests, being in the right place. I also believe that if in your job, 75% of the work that you do, you're good at, you have a great job.
Yeah, I agree. When you feel the success, right? Success breeds success. So
yeah.
What tips do you have for us as we aim to be an asset to both productivity and people on the job?
Well, I'll tell you three things. Let your character shine before men. I think we're all on a journey to become who God created us to be. And when we let our character shine before men in our workplace, in other words, you finish a task, you go to your supervisor and say, hey, I'm finished. Or you go to other people that you're working on a team with and say, do you need any help? Let your character shine before you so that people know that you're a valuable asset. The second thing is execution. We're all on a journey to mastery. And so I think that as we move forward in this march from apprentice to mastery, we continue to execute. And Malcolm Gladwell wrote about the 10,000-hour rule in his book, Outliers, which essentially says it takes 10,000 hours to achieve mastery. So execution is the second thing. And then being a part of culture, allowing the social environment at your workplace, bringing your best, showing up with your ethics, your morals, your values, and changing the culture of the workplace. Those are three really important things.
Absolutely. Is there anything wrong with changing jobs after several years and doing that repeatedly?
I have had the privilege of knowing hundreds, if not thousands, of young people who are in the tech industry or some of the new industries. And I was troubled in the beginning of knowing people that they were changing jobs every few years. But what I figured out and what I think us in my generation need to know is that the technology industry changes so quickly. And I see young people changing jobs or people who are in the technology industry changing jobs fairly rapidly because of the change in technology. So before the technology boom, if you would ask me this question, I would have said, yeah, there is a problem. But as technology changes and I watch young people move up into different companies, I don't think there's a problem.
So is there anything else we can do to help encourage folks we know to return to the workforce?
In Genesis 2:7, God breathes life into Adam. The very next thing he says to Adam in verse 15 is, go tend to the garden or go to work. This is God's economy right in the beginning. And if you fast forward into John, Jesus says, my Father and I are always working. So work is a righteous part of God's economy. And I think that if people have had bad experiences at work, it's time now that we're post-pandemic to begin to look and go back to work again and become valuable assets to companies or starting your own business, however that looks.
That's businessman and author Bob Hassan. You can catch up on each of the Family Life news features at familylife.org/podcasts. Just ahead. No. Not those kind of banana splits. We'll explain in a moment.
Well, good afternoon to all. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. We're watching a stalled cold front across the lower Great Lakes this day. That will be the weather maker moving forward, popping some showers and storms over the next 24 to 36 hours. Behind the front, though, high pressure builds in for what should be a pretty good weekend. For this afternoon, we'll have partly to mostly sunny skies, but with a stray thunderstorm in parts of western and central New York, the high temperature into the 80s. It'll be variably cloudy and humid at all night tomorrow with showers, a couple thunderstorms in the mix as well. Low tonight, 60s, the high tomorrow, mid-70s to the middle 80s. Then on Saturday, it'll be a partly to mostly sunny day with a slight chance of a shower, especially from the Twin Tiers south. High temperatures Saturday in the 70s.
All right, thank you again, Kevin Williams. Finally at noon, today is a holiday you'll want to celebrate before it splits.
La Trobe, Pennsylvania is famous for a lot of things. It's the birthplace of Mr. Rogers. It was long thought to be the site of the first professional football game. And in 1904, La Trobe optometrist David Stickler invented what we celebrate today. It's National Banana Split Day. Strickler was inspired by the fruit-laden sundaes he saw while vacationing in Atlantic City and aspired to create something similar. He sold the new concoction for 10 cents, and it quickly caught on, leading Strickler to buy the pharmacy below his office and sell his tasty treat there. So today, give your taste buds the thrill of delicious ice cream and luscious chocolate covering a fresh banana topped off with nuts, a cherry, and whipped cream. After all, this holiday does have quite a bit of appeal. Brian Querrey, Family Life News.
There are definitely worse ways to get your daily banana. Well, time for us to split. That's the world we live in for Thursday, August 25th, 2022. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Mark Webster, Family Life News.
You've been listening to The Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.